Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this last day of November the 30th, and it's all things political this hour with Carl Cannon. Carl is the Washington Bureau Chief of Real Clear Politics. We have so much to talk about. The United Nations climate change negotiations began today in Paris. A huge gathering, leaders of 150 nations and 40,000 delegates from 195 countries are there. The overriding mission to agree on legally binding reductions in greenhouse gas emissions meant to hold global average temperatures short of a 2 degrees Celsius increase over pre-industrial global temperatures. What are the hopes that can be achieved during this two-week conference? We'll talk a lot of politics this hour. We will look at Donald Trump and ask the question whether or not he has a chance of winning the presidential nomination. And we will talk about lots of other things. Real Clear Politics had some interesting columns on Hillary Clinton becoming probably the first woman ever nominated for president by a major political party. But would the Republican nominee start off the general election as the favorite? America's refugee debate, we will talk about that. The Koch brothers are bringing a Libre initiative to Wisconsin to attract Latino voters. What are Republicans doing to attract Latino and African American voters? Do they need to do that in order to win the presidency in 2016? We will talk about the Planned Parenthood attacks, the Friday shootings in Colorado, an interesting piece from Real Clear Politics by John Huntsman and Joe Lieberman, who propose a solution to how the U.S. can stop ISIS. And our guest has even written, I'm so happy he did this, about why Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln that is, and James Garfield, nobody ever writes about James Garfield, and he's worth knowing about, why they resonate now. We'll be welcoming phone calls as we discuss those topics and whatever you would like to bring up. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, or on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. Carl is Washington Bureau Chief of Real Clear Politics. He's a past recipient of the Gerald Ford Journalism Prize for Distinguished Reporting. He has worked as executive editor of PoliticsDaily.com, D.C. Bureau Chief for Reader's Digest, and White House correspondent for both the Baltimore Sun and the National Journal. And we are pleased to have you with us. Hello, Carl.
Kathleen, it's a privilege.
Very nice to have you with us, sir. We have so much to talk about. I think we should go to Paris first. This is one huge conference. Are there high hopes that everybody's going to agree on a way to hold global average temperatures short of 2 degrees Celsius increase over pre-industrial global temperatures, Carl?
Well, you know, you said it's a huge thing. In this country where everything, it seems, is a partisan issue. Pretty soon, football will be a Republican sport, I guess, and baseball a Democratic sport. I don't know where we're going with it. But around the world, there's an emerging consensus. I mean, you have leaders of 150 nations,
yes,
there, 40,000 delegates, 195 countries attending this conference. They're calling it, I don't know if it's COP21 or COP21. Maybe you do your radio. You have to learn that kind of thing. I'm a print guy, so I can just write it.
I don't know what it is. COP, I'd say.
Yeah, it stands for Conference of Parties, and it's the annual forum to tackle global, climate change on a global level. And if ever there is a global issue, this is the issue, because we all share the same atmosphere. And if this is an issue that motivates you, this has to be, I would say, a moment of high hope. The president's there,
mm-hmm,
and despite some Republicans, going around saying, well, he's a lame duck, the next president might not be where you are, he's representing this country, and there's just this consensus emerging around the world. So I think, are they going to be able to reach that target? I don't know. The Washington Post had a story today, Kathleen, said, if we reach it, we'll be using technologies that haven't been invented yet. Well, okay, that makes you take stock.
Mm-hmm.
But at least they're talking about it, and there does seem to be a consensus worldwide.
Mm-hmm. And I think the U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon had a point when he said a political moment like this may not come again. This is an incredibly important conference.
Well, that's right, and the other thing is that if you think about the leaders that are there, I think Vladimir Putin said that called climate change one of the greatest threats humanity is facing. And he's saying, you know, Russia's done X, Y, and Z. We'd like them to do a lot more, but the Chinese president is there. He's not saying what the Chinese said, you know, if you think about it, even 3 or 4 years ago, we're an emerging economy. We can't deal with, you know, don't bother us with your, you know, your green, you know, your Oregon, I should say Wisconsin liberal stuff. We're trying to feed our people. They're not saying that now. They're pointing to efforts that they've made. They've been in previous negotiations with the president of the United States. So you're not having any major powers there saying, we don't want to deal with this. They're arguing how they can deal with it while not hurting their economies, but that's progress.
Let's talk about the shootings at Planned Parenthood last Friday. Carly Fiorina citing typical left-wing tactics to link Planned Parenthood videos with the Friday shootings in Colorado. Is there a link? Is it worthy of discussion?
Oh, boy, Kathleen, it's such a hard thing. I don't mean to sound naive and like a, you know, but I just wish sometimes we'd have a moratorium on this kind of talk after these tragedies. I guess that's the time to talk about the issues involved, which are normally we think of as, do we need more gun control? Do we need to change the mental health system? Do we need to give people more help? Does the you know, in the press, we talk? Should we not name the names of the shooters? There's a lot of things that we do, and I guess I'm with President Obama on this. I'm sick of this, and I don't mean I'm sick of it because it's not worthy. There's so many of these. They're just getting, it's numbing. I thought Planned Parenthood and its allies were a little quick to try and pin this on conservative rhetoric. There's no real evidence for that yet. There's this one sort of half sentence that we all heard that went over the wires about the shooter allegedly telling police no more baby parts or whatever, but that's a snippet. I don't think it's time to have that conversation yet because we don't know what he was motivated. The first reports were we weren't even sure he was headed to Planned Parenthood. He might have been headed to the supermarket, which is called King Supers, and ended up in the Planned Parenthood facility. So I guess my thought is that we should wait on that. In terms of the, and then of course the Republicans, not liking this talk, then fired back themselves, and I think they ought to wait too. I think what they should say instead of this is left wing attempts to demonize us, I think both sides actually should just say let's wait and see what the facts are.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you wrote this piece or somebody, I think it was somebody else from Real Clear Politics, but you'll be familiar with it. Looking at Hillary Clinton, almost certain, and let me ask you if you agree with that, that she'll become the first woman ever nominated for president. The article went on to say that the Republican nominee would start off the general election as the favorite.
The Republican nominee?
Yes.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. That's these head-to-head polls. They vacillate. That's a little dated. That's changed in the last few days. I don't necessarily think it's true. You know, if we're really in 50-50 nation now, if the Republicans nominate one of their, I don't want the Trump voters to light up your phone line, so let me just say one of the more, a person like Marco Rubio, let's just say an attractive young guy who got a story of his own. If they nominate someone like that, or even Chris Christie, I think you'll see this thing start pretty close. That's the kind of, we're in a historic period, and we didn't realize this right away because Ross Perot ran and Bill Clinton ran pretty comfortably over George H.W. Bush and Bob Dole in 92 and 96, but he never got a majority of the vote, even in 96, Bill Clinton did. And so we didn't realize this, but we're in a period of relatively close elections. You know, Barack Obama won in re-election all these swing states. Remember the states we're talking about? I guess Wisconsin was on some of those lists, but, you know, Ohio, you know the states, Ohio, sure. Colorado, Carolina, Virginia, Florida. And Barack Obama won all of them. I mean, he won all New Hampshire, won all the swing states, very narrowly some places comfortably. And he wins by, you know, 3 points. And we think that's a comfortable election. It's a landslide today. So I don't think you're going to see whoever, unless she runs against maybe Ted Cruz or Donald Trump, that'd be a different story. But I think it'll be a close election in the end, and I think it'll start as a pretty close election. But I actually think she'd be slightly ahead in the polls at the outset. That's what I expect.
And, Carl, do you expect that it will be Marco Rubio?
Here's the thing, Kathleen. Can I back up a minute and say something about Hillary? I got a call many years ago. It seems like it's the Pleistocene era, but it was probably 2006 or early 2007, from a guy named Paul Glastras, who I know. He worked in the Clinton administration. He's a great guy. He edits a liberal magazine called Washington Monthly here in the nation's capital. And he said that that he wanted to write a cover with a cover story with two sides of the debate. One is Hillary Clinton should not run for president. She would wreck the party. She has no chance. It's time to turn the page. And the second column was Hillary Clinton should run. She'd be a very strong candidate. There's no reason. All this happy talk about how damaging she'd be is silly, and it's ahistoric. And he said, and I hear you've been going around Washington saying the latter thing. And I said, well, Paul, I can't write that piece for you. I have to write it for my own magazine. But Hillary Clinton is the next president of the United States. And he says, oh, please, please, please. He said, you don't want to make a grown man beg, do you? And I said, well, Paul, he was so funny about it. I said, do you still pay a pittance? He said, yeah. I said, okay, I'll do it. He laughed. I wrote this cover story. It's called Why Not Hillary? If you Google my name for years, it was the first one that came up. And I pointed out that she had basically 100% name identification, very good vibes among Democrats, rank-and-file Democrats, that she was to be the first woman nominated by a major party, that the electorate was clearly ready for a woman president, had been for a while, and that every poll, every social scientist who looked at this had agreed with that, and that she was polarizing, but in the same way that the country's polarized now, and that anybody would be polarizing, and that she's not, and that she would actually, and that she'd be able to raise all this money, and that there was no reason not to embrace her as a potential nominee. So that was the column I wrote. Now, I did not see Barack Obama coming. He'd been in the Senate for about an hour when I wrote that, so I don't blame myself, but I just wish I had taken out that one word, next, the next president, when I talked to Paul, because now I would be bragging about how prescient I was. So, I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is predicting the future is hard. Mm-hmm. But I think Rubio is an attractive candidate. And
I think he is, too, for the Republicans.
Yeah,
I really do.
Yeah, yeah. And I look, this thing where you're going to marginalize immigrants and people of color, I mean, that's not a winning formula. And Rubio doesn't do that. And he's got a story. He's good on his feet. He's tough. He's smart. He's young. I mean, I guess the question for conservatives and independents too is that a lot of these people think that the moral of the Obama presidency is not that experience doesn't matter. And so, you know, he's another freshman senator, which is what Barack Obama was in 2008. In fact, Obama made that joke about Rubio at the White House Correspondents' Dinner a couple of years. He said, yeah, as freshman senator, who do you think he is? Why is he waiting in line? Mm-hmm. He was talking about himself as well as Rubio. It was a clever needle. But having said that, you need charisma. And they're going to be running against a juggernaut. Clinton is a formidable candidate.
Mm-hmm. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel had a big story over the weekend about the Koch brothers speaking of Latino voters and minority voters in the country, bringing what's called a Libre initiative to Wisconsin to attract Latino voters. I found it unusual that the Koch brothers would be funding that in a large way in the state of Wisconsin. But do you know what they plan to do, what the Republicans plan to do to attract Latino voters? Would nominating Marco Rubio be enough?
Well, that's a very good question, Kathleen. There's different aspects to it. Let's just start with the Koch brothers, though. Those guys are libertarians. They're not racists, and they're not, you know, there's no reason. There's no reason they wouldn't do that, and that strikes me. They're pretty smart too. I'm on their side of that argument, and the argument being, does the Republican Party need to worry about Latinos?
Mm-hmm.
I'm written this, and I think, and this is my opinion. You know, people can have different opinions, and I'm not sure I'm right, but my opinion is that if the Hispanic vote in this country ever goes like the black vote, or if the Asian vote ever goes but like the black vote, and what I mean is a monolithic Democratic vote that you don't even have to try for, you just get automatically, I think the Republican Party goes away. Mm-hmm. It becomes the Whigs. Mm-hmm. That's my view. And the Republicans, and most of the Republicans I respect know that. Rance Priebus, the Republican RNC chairman, certainly does, and he's cautioned these people. He's done all kinds of outreach, and this was supposed to be their year when they made that case. So what happens then? Well, Donald Trump comes along,
right,
which is about the last thing a responsible Republican wanted. And, you know, he thought all, and in his inaugural speech, his speech announcing for president, he says, you know, Mex people come from Mexico, and they're not the best people. They're rapists and drug dealers, drug mules, whatever, and rapists. He used that word. And I thought, that's not only unpresidential and borderline racist, it's dumb. But, you know, Trump keeps saying, hey, I'm number one in the polls. How dumb can it be? Well, that's not a general election, is it?
Yeah. Well, let's welcome phone calls. We have a lot to talk about with Carl this hour. Carl Cannon is our guest. He is the Washington Bureau Chief of Real Clear Politics. Our phone number for this last Monday in November, last day of November, all things political, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Lines are open for you at this very moment. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Please leave your comments there as well. And we're on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All things political this hour, 800-486-8655 is our number, and we have lines open as we talk about the climate talks that are taking place in Paris. We talk about the Planned Parenthood shootings, Hillary Clinton, will she become the nominee of the Democratic Party? What about Republicans gathering votes from minorities in this country, particularly Latino voters? And what are Donald Trump's? We haven't talked about this yet, but Donald Trump seems to be getting some pushback from the press on some of his comments. The latest one about hundreds of thousands of people cheering the falling of the Twin Towers on 9/11, which he said happened in New Jersey, and commentators and press people are saying that never happened. And so on it goes. What are his chances of winning the Republican presidential nomination? We'll talk about that. 800-486-8655, our number. Charlie in Milwaukee is our first caller for you, Carl. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was just going to say I'm a conservative who also believes in climate change and would like some practical or something done with regards to it. But with President Obama, I just don't trust him. He lied about Benghazi. He lied about immigration and Obamacare. If I don't trust him, how are we going to get important legislation like climate change passed? Because it is a very delicate and controversial issue. Thank you.
Carl.
Well, Kathleen, this caller, Charlie, underscores one of the things we were talking about before the break, which is that this is becoming a consensus. The caller identifies himself as a conservative. He clearly doesn't hold the president in high regard, doesn't trust his word, is what he said. And I'd make two comments about that. The first is it shows you why trust is important in the presidency, and not just your, you know, the personal life, the stuff that we went through when Bill Clinton was president, but more important, really, public policy. George W. Bush's assertions about Iraq's nuclear program, proven to be untrue, actually. Doesn't mean he was lying, and I'm not saying that, but it made people trust their judgment, made people trust their word, it made people, some people, many people, think that they were not telling the truth. That's why it's so important for a president to tell the truth. I wrote a piece for the Atlantic Monthly several years ago, a cover story, When Presidents Lie, and the repercussions of that are great. So here we're talking about climate change, and this caller agrees with the president on the need to address it, but doesn't trust the president because of other issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you like your doctor, you can keep it. Well, that wasn't true. And the president either knew it wasn't true or didn't know anything about his signature policy achievement. So, not good. And it doesn't, independent voters and conservatives don't, if they don't trust the president, they don't trust him to negotiate with the Chinese, they don't trust him to act in good faith. It's a real problem. In the end, if the scientists are right, climate change is a much bigger issue than Obamacare, and we're going to have to pull together on this. We're going to have to trust one another to deal with it.
It doesn't seem to be hurting Donald Trump when it comes to telling the truth. He doesn't tell the truth. He's still number one in the polls.
Trump. Well, all right. Let's talk about the Donald.
Okay.
Yeah, he says. He says a lot of things. In fact, rarely does he say anything that's accurate. Whether he's lying or not, I don't know. He may have his sense of certitude seems absolute. It may be a new kind of mental health condition called Trumpism. But he literally says, he said to George Stephanopoulos, I said this, I saw it, as if him repeating it is evidence.
Right.
It's an odd verbal tick, but it seems to be where he's coming from. Thousands of Arab Americans did not cheer the downing of the World Trade Center in Jersey City or Patterson or whatever. You know, that didn't happen. There were a couple of dozen kids who did something. There was a academic at Rutgers who looked in this very, who did, you know, something that could be construed as a positive demonstration. Donald Trump did not see it on television because it wasn't on television. There were people who cheered in the Middle East, in the Arab world, Palestine notably. I don't know thousands, but dozens, hundreds, I don't know. There were clips of that. He may be conflating this. But the bigger picture is he just says whatever comes into his head, whatever he feels like saying. And we report it in the press and then debunk it. And when you do, you get this pushback. I've had these, you know, letters to the editor and comment sections. People call me on the phone. Oh, you see, you're part of the problem. You're an elitist.
Really?
This is why we like Trump. Because you're, and it's some weird jujitsu. If a person points out that it's untrue, it doesn't prove he's not telling the truth. It proves that the press is out to get Trump.
Right.
So it's an inoculation in a strange way. If you're looking for some good news, though, Kathleen, it's this. Yes, Trump's leading in the polls, but it's not a majority. He's getting a small plurality, really, 25%, in among people who say that they're Republican primary voters,
right,
which is a very small mm-hmm. subsection. So he's getting a plurality of a very small subsection. If Donald Trump gets 51% of the vote in a national election, well, I'll just say, I'm not saying I'm going to quit because I still got one kid in college, but I will be very shocked, and I will have to write a column saying I didn't see it coming, but I don't believe that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is true, and I wonder how this factors in. We do have to be reminded that most people are not paying attention to all of this. We are people who listen to this show, are people who read and love politics are paying attention, but most people aren't.
Well, look, I agree with that, Kathleen. That is right. But let me add something. Let me amplify on that with this point. The voters know what polls are used for. They're not dumb. I mean, every exchange between a pollster and a person that's not an automated poll, even those automated polls, it begins with a lie. And the lie is told by the pollster, because the question is, if the election were held today, would you vote for Harry Truman, Donald Trump, whoever, right? Social scientists have asked that question. And in a horse race poll a few days before an election, it's pretty good. Not very good, because we've missed the last few in Europe. We missed the New Hampshire primary last time. We missed Kentucky bad just
mm-hmm.
recently. But pretty good. But the voters know damn well the election isn't tomorrow. They know it's not for 350 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a freebie. You're asking them to send a message. That's what you're asking them. You're not really asking who they're going to vote for, because if you did, you wouldn't say if the election were held tomorrow. And guess what? They're sending a message. Oh, and here, the Trump phenomenon is interesting, because then you have to add Carly Fiorina to it, and you have to add Ben Carson to it in the Republican side, and probably Bernie Sanders, too.
Mm-hmm.
This country isn't going to elect a socialist who has no major legislation to his name president. They're not going to elect Bernie Sanders president. They're not going to elect a person who's never held elective office like Trump or Carson or Fiorina president. But they're mad, and they're sending – and this is where the right and the left agree, and the further you go from the center, the madder they get on each side. They don't like the way Washington works, and they're trying to tell us that. And so to that extent, we need to listen, not to Trump, but we need to listen to the people who are saying they're voting for Trump, and we need to try and understand why.
Let's go to Dan in Madison, our next caller. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My comment is really directed towards the next topic, or I think your next topic, about the shooting at the abortion clinic. And really the point that I want to make is two points. Number one, we really need to include white Christian terrorism when we talk about these things. That's really what it is. Case after case, it happens. Here's the latest. That's the first point. The second is that are we now going to start not accepting white Christians into this country? And will we start expelling them, the ones that are here? I'd like to know. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Dan. Carl.
Well, he doesn't really want to know that. That's sophistry. We're not going to expel native-born Americans here. And I don't really know what white Christian terrorism even is. But I wouldn't. There is something about the Planned Parenthood shooting that I wonder about. And I would raise this as an issue, which is this. Even if you believe that life begins at conception, that Roe v. Wade was wrongfully decided, like Mike Huckabee, you know, you call this thing terrorism, and he did. But it begs the question of what you do to prevent it. This is not the first attack on a Planned Parenthood clinic. And again, even if you think, I'm pretty sympathetic to the pro-life side, but that's the law of the land. It was decided by the Supreme Court. It's being reaffirmed by the Supreme Court. In a state, Colorado Springs, you'd have a solid majority of people who favor it. And if you're going to have these people, these nuts coming out of the woodwork with automatic weapons, maybe the government needs to protect those places and, you know, with guards, armed guards. This is, again, the right to an abortion is a constitutional right of every woman in this country. And you should, I should submit that one thing we probably should be talking about is the government have a right, the government has a responsibility to assure that people affording themselves of that right and accompanying people to those clinics are protected.
Don't you have to put this in a political context, though, as well, Carl, when you look at the rhetoric that has come from the floors of Congress, when you listen to the rhetoric of many of the Republican candidates who are going on at great length about defunding Planned Parenthood, who are going on at great length about the video that was released, that was a doctored video, and describing it in great detail. I mean, there is something about that.
Wait a minute. I would challenge that. I saw that in the AP story. I don't know if this was a doctored video.
Oh, I have read that it was definitely doctored.
What do you mean? Edited?
Yes. Highly edited.
But they put the complete videos on their site. I think we need to be careful impugning the motives of those people. Their right to life, you know, absolutist, no question. But they're not talking about killing people. They're talking about saving people. I guess I'm skeptical. I know that this is it's a talking point at the DNC. I was over there this morning. But you know, it's what liberals are saying to one another, but I think we need to be careful there, too. We always have to, you know, hate speech it can be in the eye of the beholder. Some of the things being said this morning about the pro-life people is the same kind of speech that they're objecting to. So this guy, inaptly named Deer, this person who gets in fights everywhere he goes, is restraining orders against him, lives like a hermit. I don't know that who knows what motivates a guy like that. There was a guy who killed two white people, white Christians, I guess our other caller would say, on television while they were doing a stand-up about a feature at Smith Mountain Lake. He was a black guy, and he said before he killed himself that he'd been inspired by Black Lives Matter. I don't think that Black Lives Matter should have been blamed for those two deaths necessarily. I I guess we should all watch our rhetoric, but we can't talk about politics in a way that would prevent the craziest person in a country of 300 million from taking it the wrong way. We don't want to censor ourselves that much, do we?
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to phone calls. Dan, thanks very much for your call. Lori in Madison, hi.
Kathleen, your guest is moving dangerously close, for me at least, towards just losing all credibility with that statement that he just made. I mean, what Carly Fiorina described simply does not exist in the real world. And the rhetoric that was used with respect to Planned Parenthood, I mean, Planned Parenthood was accused of selling baby parts for profit, which is just simply a falsehood. And that video was doctored. That wasn't my point, though. Your guest was also in danger of losing credibility with me when he mentioned the Koch brothers and mentioned the fact that he doesn't believe that they're racist, and we have this example of their push for Latino voters. Now, I, you know, don't know what's in the heart of the Koch brothers, and I think it, of course, the Republican Party itself identified Latino vote as strategically important 3 years ago after Mitt Romney had lost. And, of course, your guest is right. Donald Trump upset the apple cart, and now we're getting a very different kind of rhetoric, et cetera. But, you know, nonetheless, I don't see the Koch brothers being outspoken about issues that even libertarian Republicans are pushing with respect to, say, voter ID, which has been shown in Texas, where it was instituted, to disenfranchise people who had been registered previously but could not register under the legalities of the new law. I mean, and it disproportionately affected minorities, including Latinos. I don't hear the Koch brothers speaking out against policies like this that disproportionately affect minorities and might be said to be, at the very least, they promote a kind of institutionalized racism, if not a case of racism where the individual has to be show individual prejudice him or herself. If I made my point clear. Have I made
yes,
my point clear?
You made your point clear. Thank you very much, Lori, for your call. Carl?
Well, it wasn't clear to me. I don't know what he's accusing the Koch brothers of not, I don't know. Here's the thing about Latino outreach. If you follow this gentleman's logic, it's, you know, it's heads I win, tails you lose. If the Republicans make outreach to Latinos, they're being, you know, they're being tactical and saying they're strategically important. There's a cynicism implied there. If they don't, then they're ignoring Latino voters. Both parties realize or should that Latino voters are important, but all voters should be important. I mean, it's not so much that the Republicans need to go out of their way to appeal to Latino voters as to not antagonize them. What Mitt Romney said in 2012, I was there when he said it, was at a debate. He said, you know, what's your answer? Self-deportation. And I was sitting there, and I thought, in fact, I emailed our reporter Alexis Simmendinger, who covers the White House for Real Clear Politics, and I said, "Well, okay, there goes the general election." I mean, what a dismissive thing to say. And if you're an immigrant, if you're a Hispanic, if you're a liberal on immigration, as I am, you're thinking, "Well, he's just told these people they're not welcome." I think a political party should make all Americans feel welcome. And when it comes to the debate over so-called illegal immigration, the debate really is, I'm going to give my opinion here. It'll be how we accommodate the people who are here, put down roots here, and what kind of life we offer them. Donald Trump says he wants to deport all 11 million people here without papers. That's very near. If you had designed something to antagonize Republican Party. That would have been it. That's why, I mean, you know, it's why some people think Trump isn't even really a Republican. He's a stalking horse for Bill Clinton, or he wants to run a third party candidate, or he's just screwing around saying whatever comes into his mind, because that's not a winning formula.
Back to the Koch brothers for just a moment. Tell me, Carl, if you think this is a winning strategy. From what I've read about their Libre initiative, they want to promote economic freedom and small government principles, the goal to empower the U.S. Hispanic community so that it can thrive and contribute to a more prosperous America. They will be highlighting the issues of school choice, government overregulation, opposition to the Affordable Care Act, and an immigration reform, which would mean a path to legal status for minor children.
Yeah, well, this Libre initiative is not new. I think it goes back 3 or 4 years now. And the idea here is that they're staking out some sort of supposedly middle ground, I don't know, or thoughtful ground. But this idea that the Republican Party has something to – the conservatism, let me use that, has something to offer Latinos. I used to hear this when I was a young reporter. I mean, I heard this 20, 30 years ago in California. Oh, these people are conservative. They're Catholic. Well, about half of them are Catholic, actually. But they're Catholic. They're family, pro-family. They're entrepreneurial. They'll get our message. And that's okay as far as it goes. It's not a new idea. It is an old idea. But the more important thing is, do you have two things? There's two things more important than that. One is, do you have people in your party, prominent people, who are saying either borderline racist or outright racist things that drive them and alienate them? And do you have, and where are they on the other public policy issues? Not just immigration, but the other issues. Obamacare is very popular among Hispanics.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans, you know, you don't hear them talking about that, but they need to think that one through. The people coming from Latin America, a lot of them have an idea that the government should be involved in health care, and they don't have the same fault lines that Anglo conservatives do. So I'm not sure the initiative will even work. But the only point I was making, Kathleen, is that if somebody does an outreach to a community, it's a little disingenuous to accuse them of being cynical. I mean, maybe they are, maybe they aren't. But both parties do that.
Carl Cannon is our guest for All Things Political, the Washington Bureau Chief for Real Clear Politics. Next question, which is worthy of hours and hours, how can the U.S. stop ISIS? Real Clear Politics had an interesting piece. John Huntsman and Joe Lieberman propose a solution. We'll ask Carl what that solution is and if he's heard other good solutions as the world deals with this, probably for some time to come. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and we have lines open for you right now, 800-486-8655, email talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, @KDunnShow. Hour two of our program, Marilyn Robinson, who had a long conversation with President Obama that was published in the New York Review of Books. She's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author. Her latest series of essays is The Givenness of Things. Marilyn Robinson after the 2 o'clock news. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Carl Cannon is our guest now, 800-486-8655. John Huntsman and Joe Lieberman propose a solution to how the U.S. can stop ISIS. Is it worth listening to? Who else has proposed a solution, Carl?
Well, you know, after the Paris attacks, John Huntsman and Joe Lieberman, two centrist guys who, in our current Manichaean politics, don't really have a natural political party anymore, wrote a piece. We carried it, and you know, their suggestion to start with sounds Pollyannish almost. But what they said, the first thing they said is, we need to face this together. And they were, I'm going to read you one paragraph of what they wrote. The initial U.S. reaction to terrorism on French soil with President Obama, congressional leaders and presidential candidates shouting at one another across the Atlantic couldn't have been comforting to anyone, not in the United States, not in France, not in any of the nervous nations who see themselves in the terrorist crosshairs next. The American people need and deserve to know what this country is going to do to protect our homeland. Calling the commander-in-chief names, they continue, the president himself dissing critics' alternative ideas as popping off and summarily refusing to alter an uncertain course is not acceptable after Paris. Now, that's what they said, and that's what they were talking about there. It was a strange thing is that after this happened, you saw this kind of panicked talk on the among segments in the Republican, the 2016ers mostly, but also on Capitol Hill, about taking 10,000 Syrian refugees. And the idea there was that, well, there might be, you know, a couple of terrorists who slipped in there.
Mm-hmm.
Not an irrational fear, but expressed kind of an intemperate and panicky way. And then the president, instead of addressing the fears of his critics, just mocked them. It was unseemly on both sides, Lieberman and Huntsman thought, and I would agree with that. I mean, why do we need to take any of those people? Well, let's start with this. Because we wrecked their country, you know? I mean, this is still fallout from the 2003 invasion of Iraq, and I think anybody who disputes that is really just too partisan. They need to think about what they're saying. And then President Obama's, you know, George W. Bush invading that country, President Obama leaving it, then the red line in Syria, all this chaos that the United States has contributed to, done very little to help. I mean, Ben Carson, of all people, went there over the weekend and said, you know, that these camps in Jordan and in the region, there's a $3 billion shortfall. And Ben Carson, nobody's going to say he's not conservative. He suggested the United States is obliged to at least help with that money. And that's the kind of thing that Huntsman and Lieberman were getting at, is let's talk about solutions. We're really calling each other names 24 hours after Paris? Boy, the French didn't do that after 9/11. They ran headlines saying we're all Americans now. They pulled together behind us. We didn't pull together. And I thought that was an important thing they wrote.
Do you think anybody has an answer, though, Carl, of how to stop this, how to stop these people?
Well, Kathleen, look, the people who've committed these unspeakable crimes, beheadings, journalists and aid workers, throwing gays off of rooftops, slaughtering people en masse because of their religion, whether they're Christians or Shiite Muslims, that kind of nihilism can't be reasoned with. It can't be accommodated. It can be, you know, surrendered to or exterminated. So there's going to be a military component of this. And probably means arming the Kurds. It probably means talking to Turkey and Iraq and Iran about a Kurdistan homeland. It probably means, nobody wants to say this, but probably means a multinational force that would include U.S. troops. But it also means very heavy negotiations. And whatever you think of that Iran nuclear deal, John Kerry's attempts to negotiate peace in the Middle East, peace in Iran, I think we're going to need a lot more of that. And we may have setbacks. It may not always work. But Lieberman and Huntsman invoked Arthur Vandenberg. Now, Kathleen, I don't know if you're old enough to remember him, but he said politics stops at the water's edge. It's also time for the United States to rediscover that value. And I mean, the headline of their story was, again, their column was Against ISIS, United We Must Stand. And that's not what we are, is United.
Let's go next to Maddie in Waupaca. Hi, Maddie.
Hi. I would just like to say that your guest pretty much wrote Bernie Sanders off, like she almost declared that Hillary was the winner. And I thought that I heard a report of a poll last week that someone conducted that in Wisconsin, in a race between the Democrats and the Republicans, that Bernie Sanders would beat the top Republican candidates rather than Hillary.
Well, Kathleen, you ready for me to respond?
Yes, of course, Carl.
I shouldn't have been so dismissive of Bernie Sanders. Look, it's my opinion that she's a stronger general election candidate, and that his record is more liberal than a general election electorate would go for. But you know, I've been wrong before. I remember my first campaign I covered. I thought John Glenn would be a fine 2-term president. He don't think he got out of Iowa or New Hampshire. So I'm not omniscient. The latest polls, though, in the head-to-head between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders show she's up about, in the Real Clear Politics polling average, nationally about 25%.
Yeah, she's up a lot.
Mm-hmm. Is that insurmountable? I don't know. She's got all this name ID. She's a real, she's a pretty good candidate. I get impatient when people saying she's a poor candidate. I mean, compared to what? Compared to Bill Clinton? Well, that's like comparing other generals to U.S. Grant. You know, I don't know that that's fair, but. But there is a restlessness on the Democratic side as well as the Republican side. And Bernie Sanders has an important message, a couple of them, really. He says that capitalism, the way it's practiced, corporate capitalism in this country, the way it's practiced, is an insider's game. And it rewards the rich, and it rewards people who don't produce anything, and that the working class people are not, that neither the government nor these... the big business is not performing, and that it needs more government regulation. That is a resonant message, not just in the Democratic base either. So, I wrote a book about a guy named Bill Larac called Circle of Greed, Kathleen. It was about this lawyer who sued all these companies. And he'd sue them, and he'd just have these cookie-cutter lawsuits, and everybody said he was a shakedown artist. And he eventually went to prison and lost his law license. But I interviewed Bill when he was in prison, and I wrote this and co-authored this book about him. And the amount of fraud that he found in corporate boardrooms was stunning. And that's why they settled all these cases with him. So I think that Sanders is onto something. I don't see how he can beat Clinton, but he may.
Mm-hmm. So let's end with, I'm so glad you wrote about James Garfield. We just don't remember James Garfield, and I wish he had had a chance to be president for a nice long time. I think he may have been significant. Why Lincoln and Garfield resonate?
Well, you must have read. Yeah, nobody reads that about Garfield anymore. But November 19th was his birthday, and on his birthday, I wrote a little bit about him, and he was this most extraordinary guy. His birthday, fittingly, came on the Gettysburg Address. He was a Ohioan. He was born in such modest circumstances. I mean, so poor, blinding poverty. He took a job as a janitor in a high school so he could be around books. It's like that Matt Damon scene in, Goodwill Hunting.
Sure.
Where pretty soon he knows more than anybody, and the other teachers are asking advice. He reads every book in the school, goes to the library. He's this brilliant guy. They make him a teacher, and he ends up being the headmaster of the school. He runs for Congress. He wins. Everything he does, he succeeds at. He's a general. He's a brevet general. It means he gets promoted during battlefield because he's so good by Lincoln. But by 1862, Lincoln thinks he needs him more in the Congress than he does on the battlefield, and they encourage him to run for Congress. He runs for Congress. He wins at the convention in 1880. He goes there to support John Sherman, his fellow Ohioan, the brother of Tecumseh Sherman, and there's a stampede. They want Garfield, and it's a runaway convention. Imagine if we ever got to cover one of those, Kathleen, instead of these highly choreographed affairs that are like infomercials.
Really?
So they pick him, and then he's shot by a deranged person with a gun. I mean, it's an old story in this country, sadly.
Reconstruction could have been quite different, I think.
Yes, mm-hmm. It would have been. And when he died, and he was mourned in the South as well as the North, and you can't say that for Lincoln. And so he's the first person, really since 1861, that the whole country felt was their president and their leader. And Reconstruction would have gone better, in my opinion, I think. I think you would have been a great president.
Thank you, Carl. We're out of time. Thanks so much for being with us. Carl Cannon, Washington Bureau Chief of Real Clear Politics, our guest for All Things Political. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this hour, and thanks to KP Whaley as well. Thanks for listening.